Good evening, everybody. So I just want to tie up some loose ends where we left off last week, and then we're finally going to move on to the topic. Tonight's main topic that we're going to talk about is, now that we know everything there is possibly to ever know about waiting between fleishigs and milchigs, I thought we should move on and talk about waiting between milchigs and fleishigs, and what's that all about. And that's just a pretty brief discussion. After we do that, I want to begin the next sugya, which I want to discuss is milchig of bread. And that is a big question, which probably will take us into next week as well. What is the story with, let's say, Thomas English muffins, which are milchigs, or with crackers, which nowadays are very often milchigs? Is that something that's permissible or not? So just before we do that, I just want to tie up a quick loose end from last week. We left off discussing how long must a chola wait before having milk after he has already had consumed some meat. So that was the question we were discussing. And we discussed that if you have, let's say, a katan, so generally we know the Gemara says in Yevamos, on Daf Kuf Yudalad Amud Beis, that we have an Isser of Svisa B'Yadayim. We are not allowed to serve a katan any Machalas Asuras. And we paskin, like the Rambam Shita, that not only are we not allowed to serve in Machalas Asuras Midaraisa, but that also includes Machalas Asuras Midarabanan. You're not allowed to give the child even something which is only an Isser Dirabanan. But what is the story with something which is only Isser Mitam Minhag? Let's say, for example, Kidney is on Pesach. Am I allowed to serve the child Kidney is on Pesach? We discussed as well that the Trumas Hadeshin points out, what about if I serve the child something which is in turn going to cause him to be Mevatel a Mitzvah's Essay? For example, if I give the cotton something to eat before Kiddush. So there's a Mitzvah's Essay Daraisa of Kiddush. You're not allowed to eat before Kiddush. So what's the din about feeding the cotton something which is a mere violation of a Mitzvah's Essay? Or for that matter, what about if I give the cotton to eat on silverware that was not tovel? So on all these cases, we assume the halacha is, the Trumas Hadeshin writes clearly, when it comes to a mitzvah's essay, that is not included in the iser of Svisa B'Yadayim. I'm allowed to serve my child before Kiddush. I'm allowed to serve my child something which was not toveled yet. I'm allowed to give him to eat with that kind of utensil. So now, when it comes to a minig, Rav Avadia Yosef points out that the same would apply to a minig. If we don't have a problem with serving a child before Kiddush, which is only a bittul mitzvah's essay, we say that's so low on the totem pole, you don't have to worry about the children. So for sure, says Rav Avadia Yosef, when it comes to a minig. Therefore, he concludes that one would be allowed to feed a child kidneys on Pesach, and we came to the same conclusion that when it comes to waiting 6 hours in between milchigs and fleishigs, one would not have to wait for a child 6 hours between milchigs and fleishigs. Now, what about within the first hour? So we pointed out, well, the first hour is not really a minig, the first hour is really me'ikra din. The child has to wait probably the first hour, because that first hour is not just a minig, it's really me'ikar hadin to wait in that time. So on that note, I just want to clear up that last point and point out the following, and that is that, let's say, for example, we have a young child who doesn't quite understand, he's certainly below the age of chinuch, he's 2 years old, he doesn't understand anything about milchigs, fleishigs, and minhagim, and dinim, nothing, doesn't understand anything. So when you have a child like that, and he's screaming, kicking and screaming for his milk, right? He just had dinner, and it's within the first hour. So we just pointed out that really you're not supposed to feed the child within the first hour, because that's not merely a minig, that's a real din. And maybe that falls under the category of Svisa B'Yadayim. I'm not allowed to serve my child with Dabar HaAsr. However, what happens if the child is screaming his head off, right? He wants his milk, he's about to go to sleep, and he wants his bottle of milk. So then we assume that would even be permissible within the first hour. Why? Because a child, we see clearly in Shulchan Aruch and Hilchos Shabbos, you find it in many different contexts, just if anyone wants to write this down and look it up later, I don't want to get into each case, but the Ramban Aruch Haim in the beginning of Simen Reish Ayin Vav says this, in Shulchan Aruch over there in Simen Hey, and also the Ramban in Shin Chav Ches Sif Yud Zayin. Those are just three simple examples of where we find the same klal, and that is, a child is considered like a chola she'ein bo sakana. Meaning what? Chola she'ein bo sakana we defined as somebody who doesn't function normally. So too the child who doesn't have an understanding of what's going on, and they're going to scream and scream until they get what they want. Obviously, if they scream and say they want to jump off the roof, so we're not going to give it to them. But if they're screaming and saying that they want to eat the ice cream, or they want to have the bottle of milk, even though it's within 1 hour of their eating the chicken, there's no problem of serving that to the child, and we would consider that heine revise. We would consider that part of the upbringing of the child, and a child is considered a chola she'ein bo sakana, so we would certainly be allowed to give the child milk or ice cream within even the hour after eating meat. That is just to tie up that loose end. Now, similarly, we find, what about serving a child meat within the 9 days? What's the story there? So meat in the 9 days is merely a minhag, and therefore, since it's only a minhag, that would fall under the same category of what Rabbi Avadi Yosef was saying, that you don't have to make the chumras on children when it comes to mir minhagim. Now, what about a katan sheyigil lechinuch? Just to tie up this part, what about a katan sheyigil lechinuch? Generally, we know our children go to camps, and we know that the camps are makbid, even though the kids are under bar mitzvah, or under bas mitzvah, we know that the camps are makbid not to serve meat during the 9 days, unless there's a siyum, whatever, but generally we're machmir not to do it. So why don't we know in Hilchas Avelus that the din is that ein chinuch la'avelus? We have chinuch for all the other mitzvahs in the Torah, but when it comes to Avelus, we generally are not mechanech the children. Why? Simply because we hope that when they're gedolim, they're never going to be confronted with the Avelus. That's why there's no such thing as... There's no such thing as chinuch for Avelus. As chinuch on Avelus. So you're saying, what happens, how can we tell a child to sit Shiva? Right? Generally, when a child loses a parent or a child loses a sibling, why does the child sit Shiva? What? Keep it out, but... So, let's say it's a sibling, let's say. So we always have the children sitting Shiva, even when it's a sibling. So it says in Shulchan Aruch, in Hilchos Avelus, that that's really because it's going to... What do they call it? It's going to bring out the emotions of the Menachemim even more. They're going to understand the severity of the situation that Nebuch, this person, left little Yisayim, or Nebuch, this young child, lost a sibling. So we want it to be Ma'arer Bechi. We want it to be Ma'arer feelings in the person's heart when he's coming to be Menachem Avos. So that's generally the reason. But the underlying principle is that we generally do not have Chinuch on Avelus. So if that's the case, so why is it that we're Machmir during the 9 days not to serve the children any meat? That is merely a minug, and simply the minug is because of Avelos, so why are we machmer on the children also not to have meat in the 9 days? So the Magen Avraham addresses this question. Says the Magen Avraham in Siman Tav Kuf Nun Aleph, that's Hilchos Tisha B'Av. Magen Avraham writes, no, shiny Avelos de Rabim, me Avelos de Yachid. Well, when it comes to Avelos de Rabim, where Gantz Klal Yisrael is having an Avelos period over the Churban Beis HaMikdash, so then we are machmer and we make sure that even the children are going to go along with the Nihugi Avelos. But when it comes to simply an Avelus de Yachid, when it comes just to an Avelus of a private family or a private person, so then we exempt the Katan from the Avelus because we hope that he'll never come to the stage where he will need to be Noigdos Nihukim. Now, my father has had a very serious problem with this Magen Avraham for a long time because he pointed out that if you look in all of Hilchos Avelus, nowhere does it say that an Avel is not allowed to have Basar V'Yayin. So how can the Magen Avraham assume that this halacha of not eating meat in the 9 days is based on the din of Hilchos Avelus? It doesn't show up in Hilchos Avelus at all. We don't have a halacha like that. To the contrary, in Hilchos Avelus it says, you're supposed to give the Avel, you're supposed to give him Yayin in order because it's L'Sameach Levav Enosh, right? The Yayin, as we all know, is something that takes us out of our general mood and it elevates us to feel differently about ourselves. So therefore, generally, the halacha is you're supposed to give Yayin to an Avel. So where does this minute come from of not eating meat and drinking wine in the 9 days? How can the Magen Avraham assume that it's based on the dinim of Avelus if in fact in Hilchos Avelus we don't find such a mention of a din at all like that? So my father pointed out he thinks that the din is completely different. This that we don't eat meat and drink wine during the 9 days has nothing at all to do with Avelus. Rather, it's based on a Gemara in Baba Basra Daf Samach Amud Beis. We'll get into our main shiur in a minute. I just want to close up this last point. And that is that the Gemara says that after the Churban Beis Hamikdash, so there were a bunch of chassidim, a bunch of people at the time, great tzaddikim at the time of the Churban, who said, you know what, because in the Beis HaMikdash we had nesachim, so now we're no longer going to drink wine. And because in the Beis HaMikdash we used to have meat, we used to have karbanos, we're no longer going to eat meat. And because in the Beis HaMikdash we had whatever, so we're no longer going to have this. So other tzaddikim asked them, well, if you're going to go along with this logic, well, we have nisach hamayim, so we shouldn't drink any water anymore. We have bikurim, so we shouldn't eat any fruits. And we have, we have shechita of chickens, so maybe we shouldn't eat any chickens, so you're going to starve, right? No wine, no water, no chicken, no meat, and no fruits. So what are you left with? Rice? Lechem apanim. So no bread, no anything, right? So that's the Gemara's kasha. How could it be? You're going to go and be machmer so far, so what's going to be? So they decided, yeah, good taina, but... So we should have done all this zechel and mikdash, but it's not shy. It's enat tzibi yecholim lamed ba, because what are we going to eat? Rice? What are we going to be left with? So my father pointed out that he thinks that, yes, it's gzeresh enat tzibi yecholim lamed ba for all year long, but for 9 days, we could go back to the original din, we can go back to the basics and say that, yes, zechel echurban, zechel ebeis hamikdash, we're going to abstain from drinking wine, and we're going to abstain from... having meat. The rest of the stuff, the original takana really started meat and wine. That was what the Gemara said. Then they asked them all these other questions. Meat and wine seems to be something which makes us very happy, something which is simchadik. So over here, Zechel HaMikdash, we're going to back off and say, it's not midin ha'avelis, it's midin Zechel HaMikdash. So therefore, during the 9 days, we picked up the minig, which was the original minig, right after the Churban Beis HaMikdash, of not having meat and not drinking wine. So this, within the 9 days, that is something that the Tzibur is Yechalam Lamad Bas, and when it comes to that, it's not me Dini Avelis. Yes, we had a Kasha the Magen Avraham asked. If generally children are putter from Dini Avelis because we hold as no Chinuch on Avelis, so why are we Mechanech them when it comes to the 9 days? Teretz is that the not drinking wine and not eating meat in the 9 days has nothing to do with Avelis. It's because of a Zechel HaMikdash. So when it comes to Menhagim of Zechel HaMikdash, we would include the children in those types of Menhagim as well. Fine? So that's with regard to that. Now let's move on to the next issue, which is really very much related, and that is the issue of waiting between milchigs and fleishigs. We discussed, based on the Gemara in Chulin Daf Kuf Hamad Beis, we discussed the issue of how long must a person wait in between eating meat and drinking milk, or having ice cream. Now let's discuss a little bit of a different discussion about having milk. How much must a person wait before he has meat? So let's look, number one, the Mordechai, in the beginning of Perek Kala Basar in Chulin, quotes a tshuva from the Maharami Rutenberg. Now, he doesn't quote the whole thing. I brought over here, so this is not the exact lashon of the Mordechai, but this is the exact lashon of the Maharam Rutenberg. So you look here, the Maharam Rutenberg has a very fascinating tshuva regarding this very issue. When it comes to eating meat after one has had milk, how long must he wait? Says the Maharam Rutenberg as follows. Masha shamata. He's responding to somebody who asked him about this shmua that he heard that the Maharam Rutenberg abstained from meat after he has consumed some milk. So he says, Masha shamata, this that you heard, Shani Nog, Shalalach, Basar, Behema, Achar, Gvina, Umekel, Basar, Of. Ha'emes, Agit, I'll tell you the truth. I'll tell you what happened. Kibi Mei Charfi, when I was young, Hayisi Loig, Albane Adam, Shinogim, Kane. I used to laugh at people who used to wait after they had milk. What's the problem with that? The Gemara says, clearly, in Chulin Daf Kufhei, that one is allowed to have meat immediately after he has milk?
No, meat
right after milk, correct. So, I used to laugh, that's what the Maharam Rutenberg says, I used to laugh when I heard that people used to wait. However, Hihaya hadaver nir be'enai kamo minus, says the Maharam Rutenberg. I didn't just used to laugh, it sounds like apikorsis to me. Okay, this is the Maharam Rutenberg, Rebbe of the Rush. This is one of the great Rishonim. She'os ha'menigil l'masha amr chazal b'talmud, because the Gemara says in Chulin very explicitly, she'mutr lechol basar achar gvina. The Gemara tells us in Chulin daf kofei, that you're allowed to have basar achar gvina, so there's no room for wiggle at all. A person who chooses to make a chumrah here seems to be an apikoros. That's what the Maharam Rutenberg says. Al shepam achas, until one time I had a story, badakti, I took out my toothpick, u'matzasi gvina bein shinai. Oy vey, I couldn't believe it. I had some pizza for lunch, and then I was coming 10 minutes later to have a geshmaka steak, and I realized with my toothpick that I still had some cheese stuck in my teeth. And from that time on, gazarti al atzmi lahachmir bibasar achar gvina, kama bigvina achar basar. He says, from that time on, I made up a gzeira that I'm going to be machmir and not have meat after milk the same way I don't have milk after meat. Now, that sounds like you have to wait.
You're saying you're translating
gvina as
milk. Cheese.
That's hard cheese. Okay, very good. Very good. Thank you. Very good. So let's.
This thing could have happened for a Tana also. And I'm a Meyer. When he eats a piece of cheese, mm-hmm. 2 minutes later eats meat. He
right.
Has to have some cheese.
No. So the Meyer Rutenberg says. Meyer Rutenberg says this happened to me. He says it happened to me. So therefore, I decided I have to be machmir. So let's finish reading, and we'll see if your question is still here. Ve'ein b'davar zeh kacholak al ha'talmud. Don't ask what you're asking. The Tanoim weren't afraid of this. The Amoraim weren't afraid of this. How come I'm coming up with this chumra? Says the Maharam Rutenberg Sharei Amar Mar Ukva, because the Gemara in the original source that we began this whole series with, when we talked about how much a person has to wait, Amar Mar Ukva Anolahai Milso Kachala Bar Chamer. We were Mayruch over there when we spoke about Mar Ukva, who was less machmer than his father. His father used to wait 24 hours. Meis Leis. And he says, I'm not such a big machmer, I wait misuda lasuda. And that was the whole discussion, what does it mean misuda lasuda? Sha'avivaya machmer shalach gvina achar basar achar meis la'eis. Tehainu achar esr ma'ar bashos, 24 hours. V'huha ya noeg lahamtin rak misuda lasuda acharis. V'im kain, He says the same way you find in the Gemara when it comes to waiting between meat and milk, that there are different chumras, different generations had different chumras. Some waited 6 hours, some waited a whole day, some waited less. So he says, so too over here, one has the right to make up chumras when it comes to waiting between milchiks and fleishiks. Aval ba'ov, then he argues that when it comes to chicken, shehu midirabanan, chicken which is really only considered fleishiks midirabanan, ani noeg lahakel, says the Ma'arami Rutenberg, I'm not machmer when it comes to chicken, sharei amru, ofu gvina nechalin ba'apikorin. He says that of and gvina, chicken and cheese, nechalin ba'apikorin, can be eaten one right after the other. So that's the way the Ma'arim Rutenberg ends off, and it's interesting, if you look in the Shach and Simen Pei Zayin, Simen Pei Tes, Sifkatan Yud Zayin, the Shach quotes the halacha that the Maharshal holds that anyone who is machmer in this inyan harehu apikoris, yesh alav chashash minus. Okay, interesting to note. The Shach quotes that lahalach, that he thinks that anyone who is machmer and waits after he eats his cheese in order to have a good steak, he is considered in the kat of apikorsim and minum. A peladik shach, a peladik zach. But if you look there in the Ramah quotes this Ma'aram lahalach, and he says one should be machmer after consuming milchiga products, one should be machmer and only have the fleishigs after he waits a certain amount of time. Now, the Ramah qualifies that statement and he says, well, what kind of milchigs are we talking about? Says the Ramah, we're talking about dafka gvina kasha, only if he ate hard cheese. If the person stam ate, you know, drank some milk or something like that, we would assume that he doesn't even have to be machmer at all, because that's not what the Ma'arami Rutenberg was talking about. The Ma'aram was talking about a case where he ate hard cheese, and hard cheese could get stuck in your teeth the same way that a piece of steak can get stuck in your teeth. Therefore, he says that anything less than hard cheese does not have to be waited for. Now, how long does something have to sit in order to be considered hard cheese? Oh, so the Shach points out over there, b'shem some other Rishonim, that after it is aged for 6 months, then it's considered to be hard cheese. I just want to point out lahalacha, very important din. Oh, we'll see it in a few minutes. Okay, we'll see it in a few minutes. Now, I just put on the sheet here, number Bays is an interesting snippet from Rav Asher Weiss. In case anyone's interested in the list of what is considered hard cheeses and what's not, I assume I didn't have to print it out because it's very easy. You go on the OU website, they have a whole list of like 25, 30 cheeses. And it's important to know, if you go eat at these kind of restaurants where they serve a lot of dishes with cheese, very often you don't know what the names of these cheeses actually mean, but it's very clear on the list that many of them actually are aged 6 months and you have to wait 6 hours after you eat them. So let's look at an interesting snippet that I put here from Rav Asher Weiss's tshuva, and this is Mikol Makom Nagu Rabim Lahachmir Gam Achave Gvina Raka. Rav Asher Weiss points out that yes, although the Ramah paskins lahalacha that you only have to wait after Gvina Kasha, and the Shach says that Gvina Kasha is only considered Kasha after 6 months, says Rav Asher Weiss, no, still there are those communities who have the minhag to be machmir even after eating Gvina Raka. Listen to that. There are those who are even machmir after simply drinking milk. There are those communities that wait 1 hour after drinking milk. Some have the minig 3 hours. Says the Birka Yosef, there are those who even have the minig to wait 6 hours after pasha drinking a cup of milk. Zapella. What do you mean? Why do you have to wait 6 hours? What's the concern? What in the world is the concern? Still says the Birka Yosef, there are those who have that minig of a kafachayim kosav, de'ein zeh la achar achilas gvina v'la achar shtias chalav. Kafachayim disagrees with the Birka Yosef and he says, no, it only is referring to a person who eats cheese, but not someone who drinks milk of yamenu. Says Rav Asher Weiss, in our times, no'agim rabim lahamtin chatzisha. I never heard of that either. Do you know anyone that waits? What? Where'd that come from? What? Yeah, that's right. I don't know where this came from. So he says that there are those who are machmer to wait a half an hour. V'chein ra'isi b'beis Abba Mari, he says that's his father's minig. V'gam minig zeh huva b'sefer matame ashulchan. Where I come from? What? You wait a half hour after you have a cup of milk?
Yeah.
Okay. Interesting. Okay. All right. All right, you only count as one, though. You don't count as two. I'm saying that means there's one family that has a minig, but out of everyone in the room... Really? Okay, so that's... What?
If you go to a bris, you drink a cup of coffee with some
Half hour.
Half hour. Okay. Good. So they went
half. Half hour is into the first half hour.
Uh huh. So that's I just wanted to bring this down because I think it's an interesting thing in the simple reading of the Rama in Siman Pei Tes. The Rama only says you have to wait after hard cheese. How much you have to wait after hard cheese? 6 hours. What kind of hard cheese is considered hard? Says the Shach, 6 months of age. But there are those who say that you should even wait after a pashut, a cup of milk, after drinking a hot cocoa, after drinking a coffee, person should also wait. Okay, so there's room to be machmer, and everyone should do whatever their minhag is. I'm just bringing it to your attention.
All the things that we said about waiting after meat does not apply to the milk. Things get stuck in between the teeth and the tongue and everything else.
Right, so where does this come from? So where does this come from?
Where does the 6 hours come from?
So the tongue could be, right? It comes same way a piece of steak. Yeah, it could be. I don't know. That's why it's hard to really put some sense into this. But okay, there are those who have the minhag to be machmer, so they should continue to be machmer. Those who don't have the minhag to be machmer simply do not have to at all, because it's very hard to understand what the chumrah is all about. Now, so kinuach v'adar, that certainly makes sense. You shouldn't go have a steak while the milk is still in your mouth. Very often a person drinks milk and you see white on their tongue, right? That happens very often. So that certainly is something that we should be careful about, not to have fleishigs while it's still white on our tongue. Okay.
Why is it cold milk once it's sitting in your mouth?
You're saying it should be called saliva?
Yeah.
If you have a white
tongue, That's what he's pointing out correctly, that the Gemara says by meat also, habasar odena ben shineim, that it's still considered basar even when it's stuck in your teeth. I think only once it's mu'ukal, once it's in your digestive system, then we assume. Right? Right. After the 6 hours, the Rishonim say the Chiddush. If it's in your mouth for 6 hours already, then we assume it's already digested, and even if it's stuck in your teeth, we assume it's already shriveled up or whatever. But without that, I think we assume that a person does have to wait, because even if it's in his mouth, it's still considered meichel, it's still considered a food. Okay, so let's move on. When it comes to waiting after hard cheeses, let's look at this. The Rama says, look at number gimel. The Rama says as follows. Everyone have it? Says the Rama, mihu, im ein basar betavshil. If you don't actually have basar in the tavshil, for example, we're not talking about a guy who has a pot of a pan of steak or something like that. What are we talking about? Rakshan is bashal b'kederishal basar. For example, I have a pot at home that I cook rice in. So the rice is not being cooked with any fleishigs. It's just taking the blias from the pot, right? So everything's mutter so far. Nothing happened. So now I go ahead and I eat this rice. That's all I eat. So now do I have to wait before having milk? What do you say? Of course not. Why not? Because it doesn't really have a tam basar, right? So he says the Rama, miu im ein basar betavshel rakshan is bashal b'kederishal basar mutter lechal achar okvina. I don't have to wait 6 hours after I eat something that was cooked in a fleishig pot. The Ein Bo Minig L'Hachmer, says the Rama, there's no reason to be machmer on this at all. V'chein Nogen L'Echel Basar Achar Tavshil, Sheyesh Bo Gvina O'Chalav, Mihu Yesh Lito Yadav B'Neim. Says the Rama, even though this really is not fleishigs, this rice is not fleishigs at all, it's just made in fleishig equipment, still, says the Rama, it's nice, it's a good minig for that a person should wash his hands in between. If you look in the Yad Yehuda over there, he says that it's good enough just with... What? If it's Ben Yomo. Ben Yomo. Yeah. Yeah. Both. He's going on both. It's the same thing. If a person...
How's it the same thing?
I'm sorry. B'chein nogin lechol basar, acher tavshil sheyesh. Oh yes, thank you. I skipped the last line. Thank you. B'chein nogin. This is why I brought it down. I didn't bring it for the first part. Okay. B'chein nogin. Thank you very much. Nogin lechol basar. What does this line say? It says the Rama, we have the minhag to eat basar acher tavshil sheyesh bo gvina. A very important line. Thank you. The Rama says, I have the minhag to have basar after a tavshil sheyesh bo gvina uchalav. Even though it has, meaning the first case the Rama was talking about is where it's just rice that's made in a fleishig pot. Here, the Rama is talking about a case where what?
Something's
Something made with cheese.
Something made actually with cheese. I make spaghetti, right? I make spaghetti and cheese, noodles and cheese. So I really have cheese in there. Miu yesh liitol yada bene. Fine. So the Yad Yehuda says it's good enough to wash your hands. Other Achronim say, no, you have to wash out your mouth also. Fine, whatever you're going to do. What? Because you're sitting and handling the... Yeah. And also, what? So 1 second. So, yeah. Oh. Very good. Very good. So, correct. So the Darkei Tshuva points out that you don't have to wait. He says, you see from this Ramah, he makes a whole cheshbon here, but he says, you see from the Ramah, bottom line, is that there are two tanaim that are necessary for a person not to have to wait 6 hours after hard cheese. He assumes that the Ramah is talking about hard cheese here. Even though I put hard cheese into my noodles and cheese, right? And now I have... Right? Now I cook it. I cook it all together. So we assume, says the Ramah, that it loses its status of hard cheese. Now, says the Darkei Tshuva, it's only because there are two factors that are involved here. Factor number one is the fact that it's mixed with other things. So I'm not just eating a brick of hard cheese. I'm eating hard cheese together with the noodles and everything else. So we assume it's all going to get digested together. That's one. And tanai number two is that you cook it. So ayudei, the tanai of cooking, ayudei, it's being nisbashel, we assume that it softens the cheese and it's not going to get stuck in my teeth, it's not going to get stuck in my throat. That is what the Darkei Tshuva assumes the Ramah means to say over here. It's only because I have a combination of these two factors that is what allows me not to have to wait 6 hours after having this cheese. However, based on this, if you look in the next line, the OU, this is from the OU files. The next couple of things we're going to look through are OU Pesachim, which are all very interesting. So, here, based on this, the OU issued the following Pesach. According to the above, one would have to wait 6 hours after eating Caesar salad made with Parmesan cheese, since the cheese is not softened and you're missing condition A. Again, there are two conditions in order to be mater a person and not have to wait 6 hours. Condition number one is that it's mixed with other things. Condition number two is that it's actually cooked, it's in smashel, and it becomes softer. This is a tshuva from the OU, and therefore they're warning everybody you have to be careful that after you have Caesar salad, which very often contains Parmesan cheese, so yes, the Parmesan cheese is mixed up with all the other ingredients in the salad, but it was not cooked. So since it wasn't cooked, the person has to be careful to wait 6 hours after consuming such a salad. Okay. Correct. Yeah. It's not the Darkei Tshuva. So you're wondering what's with the last line. It says Ein Tzarach L'Chapes. There was a whole long tshuva before this. I just took the last part. So that is that's with regard to the beginning part. What?
Out of context.
Yeah. Out of context. Correct. We love to quote Rav Shechter out of context. There's nothing like it. What?
Just picks this up and reads it.
What?
If someone just picks up your Marma Kumas and reads it, he'll read that line and I'll attach it to the English piece of
Bible. So you're saying I should take it out before I put it online. Okay. Good. Will do. Okay, so now let's move on to the next din, and that is the halacha of milchik bread. The story of milchik bread begins as follows. It all begins with the Gemara Pesachim Daf Lamed, Zvachim Daf Tzadihei. The same Gemara is found in both places, and let's read the Gemara together. The Gemara says, Ein lashen asa isa b'chalav. One is not allowed to, lashen means you're not allowed to knead the bread with chalav. V'im lash, and if I do so, if I put milk into the batter, Kol ha-pas asura, the entire batter now becomes asur mipnei hergal aveir. What does that mean, mipnei hergal aveir? What's going to happen? What's the mistake? Oh, because generally I sit down to dinner every night and I have fleishiks. So I like to wash a dinner, so I'm going to take out the roll from the fridge. And I forgot that I had put some milk into the mixture. So therefore, mipnei hergal aveir, we assume it's asur. Kayotzebo, similarly says the Gemara, ein tashen asataner ba'alya, I'm not allowed to shmear the tanur, I'm not allowed to shmear the oven, be'alya, which means with a certain part of basar, the imtash kalapasasur. If I do so, if I shmear the oven with some schmaltz from the meat, then the entire pas that I cook in there subsequently becomes asur. What? Lard, right? This becomes halacha lamaisen shulchan aruch simon sadi zayin sif alef and beis, and we assume that any pas that has a blia of milchiks or of fleishiks now has become pas that is not permissible to eat. Now, this is something just to keep in mind. Let's say you have a person who cooks, who bakes the bread in the oven, and before the bread is done, they throw in the chicken. It's something probably people don't think about. You say, oh, I'm not going to put anything into the mixture, of course, and I'm not going to make it milchigs, but let's say you put... Yeah.
White chicken in the one
beat. Both. Right. If it's in the oven at the same time, that's a problem.
Zay has the same din as if you're cooking it together.
Yeah. Yeah, so that's just something to keep in mind, that most people probably would never put milk into a mixture, and they would never put gravy from a chicken or from a steak into the mixture of the batter for the bread. But it's something to be careful about, that you have to make sure not to put the chicken or the meat into the oven while the bread is still baking. That will be a problem of Zaya, which we don't have a chance to get into now. It's not our discussion tonight. But Zaya, generally, we assume, does transport a tam from the other item that is being cooked in the same oven. And as you pointed out correctly, we also have to be concerned that some of the grease might spritz. It's not just an issue of Zaya, of, you know, vapor going from one to the other. It's also an issue of the gravy might actually spill from one into the next. In fact, the Chayei Adam talks about a case where they had someone had put a pan of gravy into the oven at the same time as the bread was still in there, and next thing you knew, the gravy spilled all over the bottom of the oven, and it went straight into the bread. So that was the question that they asked Reb Abula Pasveler, who was one of the Gdolim. He was one of the Poskim in Vilna. So the Chayei Adam quotes this from his Rebbe, Reb Abula Pasveler, and he says, the Reb Abula Paskin at that time, when this happened, that you should take a chicken bone and stick it into the bread. So we'll discuss that more next week when we talk about what are the ways that it's going to be mutter. What? For a hecker. Yeah, so we'll talk next week about what kind of hecker is good enough. Is it good enough to write on the package? Not good enough? We'll discuss it more when we get in depth into the sugya, but let's just begin the sugya as follows. We have this Gemara, very important Gemara, which tells us you are not allowed to make the batter either milchiks or fleishiks. That is something that's important. So Rav Soloveitchik had the following chakira when he got to this din in Yerudea. And the question is as follows. Should we assume that a person who pours milk into the batter or who pours gravy into the batter, now the bread becomes fleishiks, should we assume that this becomes a cheftza of machalas asuros? Should we assume this really becomes treif? Because the Gemara's lashon is kalapas asura. Sounds like it's now a cheftza of machalas asuros. That's the one side. Or should we assume, no, it doesn't become machalas asuros. It's simply asur b'toras gzeira. Now, everyone's going to wonder, what's the difference? Either way, it's asur. You're not allowed to eat it, right?
Why would you be chayav if you ate it?
What?
Why would you be chayav if you ate it?
That's not so negeh to us either, because we're not punishing, meaning klapi shmaya. So the Ribbono Shel Olam will figure it out, right? So we don't have to declare the Ribbono Shel Olam sveikus. No, so what are the nafkaminas la'alacha? L'maisa. What are the nafkaminas? Is it a chepsa shel iser, because it says kalapas asura? Or is it, no, this bread is just asur b'taras gzeira. So it sounds like a funny, what's the difference? It's gzeira because we don't want you to eat it with milchiks, or it's gzeira we don't want you to eat with fleishiks. But it's not that it's asur b'etzem, it's just that we said... So that's the question. Is it something that's inherently asur? Or is it something that, no, we just put a special status on this bread that it's asur mitam gzeira. So what's the difference? When we get to the nafkaminas, you'll understand. If it's treif, no, it's fleishik. What do you mean? If you eat a piece of
gravy and bread,
yeah, it's still going to be fleishik. Yeah. So there's three nafkaminas that we came up with. Nafkamina number one is the following. What? Okay, so nafkamina, that's interesting. So nafkamina number one that we came up with is the following. It says in the Rambam and the Shulchan Aruch Paskins this way as well. Let's say a person mistakenly eats something which is treif. Right, I don't realize. I pick up a piece of steak, and I don't realize it's a treif of steak. And while I'm eating it, someone points out to me that it happens to be treif. So, the Rambam paskins in Ilchos Brachos, Perek Aleph Halacha Yutes, that you don't make a bracha on it, even if it's only asur midrabbanan. I don't make a bracha not before I eat it. I don't make a bracha after I eat it. So, what do you mean before you eat it? You're asking Shalas, but you're about to eat a treif of steak. So we're talking about, let's say a guy makes a mistake, right? So a guy makes a mistake, he goes ahead, he makes a shahakol ni'abedvara on a piece of steak, he doesn't realize that it's treif. And now, while he's eating it, someone tells him, by the way, did he know that it was treif? So should he make a bracha achron or not, says the Rambam? No, absolutely not, because you ate something which is machalas asuris. That is the way the Shulchan Aruch paskins and kuf tzadivav. The Ravid disagrees, and the Ravid says, no, you had anah, bottom line, you had anah, so you should make a bracha. But we paskin la'alacha, like the shita of the Rambam, that you do not make a bracha machalas asuras. So, what if a person goes ahead and mistakenly makes a hamotzi lechem min haaretz on the milchig of bread or on the fleishig of bread? So should we assume that he should go ahead now and make a bracha achrona, berchas hamazon? Or do we say, no, that's not really machalas asuras. That's not even an iser d'rabbanan. It's just bread that has an iser of gzeira on it. But it's not that it's usser inherently. It's not be'etzem machalas asuras. It's just that it's usser mitam gzeira. So that is one nafkamina. Nafkamina number two would be the following. We have dinim of bittel, right? We know something could be batel in shishim, something could be batel b'meya, right? You need a whole lot of things in order to be mevatel something. So what happens if I have this bread, and mistakenly I cooked it with milchiks, or mistakenly I cooked it with fleishiks, whatever. And now, it's a chaticha rilis kapit, meaning, just back up for a second. What happens when I have, let's say, a situation where I have a treif piece of meat? So how many other pieces of meat do I need to be mevatel it? Two other pieces of meat, right? So it's batel in two other pieces. You have roif. But it just so happens to be that the piece of meat, each one of them is a chaticha rilis kabed. It's not stam a little piece of steak. It's, you know, a whole leg of an animal. Whatever. A whole, whatever you're going to say. A whole big piece of an animal. A whole side of an animal. So three of them get mixed up altogether. One of them's treif, two of them are kasher. So what are you going to say now? Can they become batel or not? What do you say? Why? Because you count what?
Each piece is a separate piece.
So why? What's the lumdus there? There's a lumdus here. It makes sense. So we call that a chaticha ru'uya l'hiskabed. If this is a chaticha ha'ru'uya l'hiskabed, this is something which is bakavidik on itself, meaning it's something special. Oh, so you're saying the lumdus. It's that you can't consider it mixed up with everything else. I don't say, oh, I don't even notice it. It gets mixed up in the conglomerate. That's not true. If it's a chaticha ru'ilis kabed, if it's something which in and of itself has special qualities, it's a davar chashuv, then we assume it cannot become batel because this stands out alone. I don't recognize which one is which, doesn't make a difference. But this happens to be a davar chashuv, so therefore it doesn't become batel. Similarly over here, let's say we have, you make a big sheva brachas challah, right? So you work in a bakery and we have three sheva brachas challahs. And one of them, by mistake, we cooked with milk or with meat. And they all look the same. Now it gets mixed up in all the other ones, in the other two challahs. So would you say that it becomes batel or not? Well, I would say it's a chaticha rilis kabed. It's a fancy big sheva brachas challah. It takes up the whole table. It took us a whole day to make it. You probably would say it's a chaticha rilis kabed, and you cannot assume that it becomes batel in the other two challahs. However, there's one caveat to all this. The only time we assume the halacha of chaticha haru'ilis kabed applies is only in a situation where it's usser, right, where it's intrinsically usser. Let's say, for example, I have a piece of pork that falls in with two other pieces of meat, and I don't know which one is which. So that's really inherently usser. Or I have a piece of basar b'chalav that falls in. But let's say I have an isser balua, let's say, says the Gemara. Shulchan Aruch passes like this. Let's say something is not intrinsically usser, it's just an isser balua. So, for example, I cook something in a treifa pot. So it's not intrinsically usser. It just got a tam and has an iser balua from something that's treif. And now that gets mixed up in a taruvah. So what would you assume then? So says the Shulchan Aruch, even if it's a chaticha ru'il iskabid, which generally would not become batel because it's too chashuv, since the Isser is not machmas atzmo, since the Isser is not that this is a chepta di isura, rather, it's an Isser balua, it's infused with Isser, then we assume, even if it's a chaticha rilis kabed, the rules won't apply. So too over here. If this is really considered machalas asuras, proper, it's considered intrinsically asur, then it won't be able to become batel, because it's a chaticha rilis kabed. It's a big shever brachas chal. But if it's just asur mitam gzera, so that's like an Isser balua. So we would assume it would be able to become batel. That's nafkamina number two. And nafkamina number three, which we'll get into now, a tshuva from the OU, another one is interesting. Nafkamina number three is the following. What kind of, let's say I cook the milchig or fleishig bread in my oven. So what kind of kashering would I need? What kind of kashering of the oven would I need? What would you say?
Why would you need kashering?
Because the bread is treif. Kala pas kula asura. If you cook some pork in your oven, you need to kasher it. So what would you say? Generally, we assume, if let's say I want to kasher something, which is hetera bala. Let's say I use the oven for milchiks, and now I want to use it for fleishiks. Right? So I want to kasher the oven. So we assume that Hagola is good enough. I want to kasher a pot. I used to use the pot for milchigs, now I want to use it for fleishigs. Right? So generally we assume if it's hetera bala, I didn't do anything wrong. I used to always use it for my milchigs, everything was kosher. Now I want to use it for the fleishigs because I only have one pan. Or only have one pot. So generally we assume if it's hetera bala, then all you need is Hagola. However, if let's say it's isura bala, if let's say I use the pot by mistake for basa b'chalav, I make something really trafe in it, and now I want to kasher it, so we assume Hagala is not good enough, you need actual libun, you need to actually use a fire, you need a blowtorch in order to be machsher it. So therefore, when it comes to our case, if you would assume that this pas, that this milchig bread, becomes iser machmas atzma, it becomes intrinsically usser, then what? Then what? You would need a real kashering, you would need libun in the oven. But if you assume, no, if you assume that this just becomes usser, machmas gzeira, it's not intrinsically usser, it's just that we, the chachamim, put an isser on top of this piece of bread, then we would assume that's like hetera bala, and we would assume that the oven only needs hagala, it doesn't need a proper kashering. So now look at the following question. Is kashering required for an oven used for dairy bread? That was the question that the OU posed. And let's read through this quickly. Benidon isa shenilo shabachalab. So this first paragraph is spelling out the tutsdadim. Should we assume that it's real machalas asuras, or should we assume that it's just asur machnas gzer? In the interest of time, let's skip to the next page. Ve'af, first paragraph. Ve'af sheva pischei tshuva hevi, l'divrei alivushei srad. Ha'machmir bozeh, even though the pischei tshuva on the bottom of the page in Shulchan Aruch assumes, from the levushei srad, that one should be machmir and consider the milchig of bread as if it's real machalas asuras. Ayin darkei tshuva, that's the munkacher, shehevi gam hachavis das, or gam atuf tam vadas, shenechlak alavush yisrod, whatever, chavayis real hula hakel v'shela. So the darkei tshuva quotes achronim that outweigh the pischei tshuva, and they assume that, no, you have the right to be makel and assume that this milchig of bread is not really considered machalas asuras, it's simply considered iser machmas gzera. It's like an iser balua. So far, so good? Everyone's good? Okay. V'chein nir lahedya das hashach, v'gam das hagos iser v'heter, that the shach quotes. Shegeder ha-iser shalo lechol pas chalavi, afilu b'fnei atzma, hu rak iser b'toras suffik. Says the shach, not only that, the shach says it's also only considered an iser b'toras suffik. V'einenu iser shenigzer b'toras vatei. Why? Why is it only an iser b'toras suffik? Because we don't even know if ultimately you're going to violate an iser. Meaning what? If you end up eating the milchig bread in the context of a milchig meal, so it turns out that there was no iser violated. So therefore, says the Shach, when we approach the whole sugya of milchig bread, we have to realize that we're dealing with something which is only usr mitam suffig and not usr b'taras vade. Why? Because when we're talking about basr b'chalav, that's real iser. When we're talking about milchig bread, it could turn out that in the end you're not even going to violate any iser because it will turn out that you don't even eat it with fleishigs at all. So that's something to keep in mind. Next paragraph. Okay, so that's what we're going to talk about. And the next tshuva is going to be about a goyish factory that has milchig bread that they're... First, I want to talk about the simple case. We're talking about everyone's Jews. And then we'll get to the more complicated case, what you're raising about a goyish factory. My father writes in the tshuva here in the OU that you have the right to assume that we don't have to be machsher. Why? We assume that the whole halacha, why you ever need to do kashering of kelim, is because of tam ki'ikr. What does tam ki'ikr simply mean? That we assume whatever you cooked, part of the tam goes into the kli. Tam is ki'ikr. It's as if the real ikr, Michael, is still here. It's not just that there's a tam that's lingering that's left over. We assume it's as if the whole food, the whole tray of food is still here. And therefore, if a tam ki'ikar rakshay chul machalas asuros, we only assume the din of tam ki'ikar by real machalas asuros. Ve'emes b'shulchan aruch, similarly we find in Shulchan Aruch and Yerodeus and Mekufya Gimel that there's a machlokas harishonim ibainon hechsher kelem bekelem shabalu bishul akum opas akum. Interesting question. What happens if, let's say, a guy, I have a maid in the house, who goes ahead and uses my pots without my permission, and she goes and cooks a soup. So do I have to go ahead, obviously I'm not allowed to eat it, it's bishalakum, but do I have to go ahead and kasher the kelim or not? So he quotes that b'tshuvas aran kasav the zetali b'machlokas ha'yisodis, b'geder hach iser de bishalakum and pasakum. By pasakum and bishalakum, we have the similar discussion as we're having over here by milchig bread. Should we assume that it really becomes machalas asuras, or no? Do we assume that it just becomes like an iser b'taras gzera that we don't want a person to become too close with a nachri. Okay, so that's the same kind of question. Now look down two paragraphs.
The same thing apply if the gaita uses a microwave. Can I use it after?
Seemingly, a microwave is also bishul.
Same problem.
Question, yeah. Question is, how do you kasher a microwave? Don't talk about bishulakum. What about the following case? Let's say I use my microwave for milchigs, then I use it for fleishigs. What do you do then?
You boil up water beforehand.
That's what the Adler
said. Wait, yeah. Where
you came from? No, that's what a lot of people say. It's not clear whether or not it works. What? No, it's not so clear exactly how to do it. But I'm saying a microwave we do consider to be bishul. Yeah.
A guy warms up something in the microwave, it's considered bishul. That's what I'm asking. Is that bishul akrav? Is that bishul akrav?
Cleanly, it comes and nobody's hungry today. So
generally, they say you should buy her a separate microwave or a separate toaster oven.
Is that considered bishul akrav?
I think so. Why not?
Because she didn't cook it.
So how did it get hot?
She put it into the microwave.
So, what do you mean? So if you put it in the oven, you also don't cook it.
How do you think we're making a toast?
Cooking like the microwave.
What?
Making a toast is not considered
cooking. Making a toast, that's because ein bishul achar bishul, because it's cooked already.
Right. So,
are you saying the microwave is made already?
One second.
That's a good point. You're saying you never. I'm thinking.
What they do in the Dunkin' Donuts, they make croissants with eggs, and they don't have the Jews working there behind the counter.
They have a Jew turn on the fire. The Jew turns on the fire.
Fire.
Jew turns on the fire.
There's no fire on the microwave. Every time you push the button, it's a new fire.
You open up Dunkin' Donuts, they take a croissant, they stick it into the...
Oh, so we hold Ein Bishul Achar Bishul. Oh, so I didn't realize.
No, it's a
one second.
Egg.
So when you're dealing with... One second. When you're dealing with...
No, it's not a cook.
That's what they make. Is not
they make a...
That's
an egg sandwich. Go and take a look. We had an Elizabeth.
What?
Uh-huh.
My tights was making.
You got the caterer.
So what?
So what's the process there?
He was making the process.
Okay.
When the Dunkin' Donuts here,
the process
was
the
electricity. There was a sign there that all the Dunkin' Donuts on Ashgacha, the egg, whatever they called it, the egg croissant, should not be eaten because of the Shiloh of Bishalak of the microwave.
Uh-huh.
There was a sign in the Dunkin' Donuts.
Uh-huh. It was 30 years ago.
So you're... So you're pointing out correctly. So you're pointing out correctly that generally, when I heat things up in the microwave, it's just reheating it up. I'm not cooking, correct? So, yeah, that's a good point.
Wait, what about let's say the eggplant parmesan, and leave it, and you put it in for 5 minutes.
And it's not made. Right. That's a good point. But let's say a toaster oven, right?
The bread is already made.
Which bread is already made?
Whatever you put into a toaster.
Really?
Yeah, no.
Why? Toaster oven you can cook in? No, not toast. Not toast. I'm talking about a toaster oven.
What?
It's already cooked. So we hold. So when we get to, maybe we'll have some shiurim on bishul akum. Sounds like an important issue. So. Yeah, so that's already cooked. Yeah, everything's cooked. Okay, so let's talk about it when we get there. I just wanted to bring out the point here that the same discussion that we have when it comes to milchig bread is also a discussion when it comes to bishul akum. Should we assume that it really becomes machalas asuras, or do we assume no? It's just gzeirah derabbanan, it's a harchakam derabbanan, and it doesn't really become machalas asuras. So now look over here. V'hacha, you have the paragraph begins with hacha? V'hacha b'pascha lavi, nira lomar dehavad lolosav ala. We don't have to add extra chumas, de'en lalun v'hatzrich kan hechsher. We don't have to make the people go ahead and do a kashering. Lo mi by the kli ha'afiyah she'aleim nefes ha'pas lechatchila di'esh svarah chazaka lomer she'apas ha'chalavi adayin muter hu. Meaning, if you have a factory that uses utensils to shape the bread and whatever while it's being made in the isa stage, then certainly those don't need kashering. But the question is, later on when it gets to the ovens, do you have to kasher the oven also or not? So if you look in the next paragraph, he says, achein afilu b'nogeh la'akli shebo nitgan ha'pas ha'chalavi, when it comes to the oven itself, where the milchik bread was actually baked in, har bezman la'achar gmar afiyasa v'asher hu kvar b'factory acher v'medina acheres ma'asher makom afiyas ha'pas, hazos l'chatchila, meaning, you bake the bread here, and the chashash is not that you're going to make the mistake and eat a fleishig meal here, they're going to send the bread to Africa and to other places. Right? The chashash about making the mistake and eating it with fleishigs is not a chashash that's happening here. It's going to happen somewhere else. Gam kenir lahakol v'shalo lahatzrich hechsher kelim. So my father writes over here that he assumes that the equipment in which you baked the milchig of bread in the factory does not require hechsher kelim. Look at the next paragraph. V'memela. Hakli shebo nefes o nitkena hapas yesh bo blias chalav u'mutel levash bo machale chalav. Meaning, you can't go ahead and cook fleishigs in those ovens now, obviously, because now it has a bliya of chalav. But he says you can use this factory to make a run of some type of milchig food. Meblishim tzarach lachshir meblias hapas. The hapas meolam non eshap chalios chaticha di yisiro shetatzrik hechsher. Okay, so this is what my father wrote. Interesting to note that this was in Tufshin Samach Dalet. Then, look at the next tshuva in K338 in the OU documents. Here, my father changed his mind. In Tufshin Samach Hei, he seems to have changed his mind. Let's look at the following interesting question. A non-Jewish owned company produces pot of bread, okay, exclusively for use by another company for French Toast Certified OUD. So again, what's going on here? You have one company is making pot of bread and sending that pot of bread to a company that's making French toast. The bread company wishes to produce non-certified dairy bread with all kosher ingredients on the same line used for the pot of bread. Aha.
What's non-certified bread?
Meaning, the OU is only certifying a run of power of a bread. That power of a bread is going to be sent to another factory. This Gaisha factory wants to do a run on their own of milchig bread. For their own purposes, not with the OU certification. They want to do it for their own purposes that they're going to sell to their clientele. So that's the question. The power of bread is baked in special baking pans with covers. The problematic kelim will be the common suction equipment used to suction the hot breads from the pan and the belt upon which the bread is placed after being suctioned, which will not be cleaned. Goes to show you what goes on in a factory. They don't even clean them. Okay, so do we understand the shaila? The shaila is you have this company that does one run of par for bread for the Jews. Now they want to do one run of milchig bread, which they're going to change all the kelim, but the one thing that's not going to change is after it comes out of the oven, they have these suction equipment that takes the piece of bread out of the oven and puts them onto a certain pan. So those are going to be the same. So should we assume that you're now allowed to use this factory to continue making regular power for bread, or should we assume, no, that since they baked the milchig bread and used the suction kelim as it was coming out of the oven for the milchig's bread, now you're not allowed to use it for the power for bread later on. So let's see. What's on the klisheni? No, this suction equipment goes straight into the oven and pulls the things out.
It wouldn't be a klisheni because it's a dovar bush. It would still be.
It would still be, yeah. Klisheni is generally by mashkin, but I'm not sure it's a klisheni anyway. I don't know exactly, but let's see. Okay, sayonirli. The after hapas in ena bebechilonos machalas asuros. Even though the pas is not machalas asuros, and mamela lo noig b'hadinda raisa shaltam ki ikur mikal makom lefiyam mukubalatzleinu. My father argues that since our general practice is when you have bishul akum, by mistake, a nachri cooked in my kelim. So generally we have the practice to go ahead and be kasher the kelim. That's generally our minhag. Lahatzir hechsher lechatchila avur kol kli shenivla bo machol she'asur lanu lechol me'ez etam she'yeh. Hachanami hacha. My father argues now that no, this should be the same din over here. When it comes to milchig bread, although it doesn't really become a chepzim machalas asuris, which we'll talk about a lot more next week, but still, we should need hechsher kodem sheyofu al hakelim as hapasha yisraelim yochlu la'achar mikain. Now, back to what you were mentioning before. What about the fact that it's a goyisha factory? Ba'afsha mifal shal nachrim hu, even though the whole factory is owned by non-Jews, kvar kasav agon Rav Moshe Feinstein in the Igros Moshe, shadavar mechur hu litein hechsher b'kiai gavna. Ayim asher kasavna b'dino the hechsher kelim sha'aleim salu ha'kofi beans ha'biltik sherim lepesach. That was a big discussion at the time when they had coffee beans that didn't have a hechsher for Pesach about making other products on the same line that were kosher for Pesach. What's the story with that? So although this is a non-Jewish factory, still that is not a reason to allow any of this business to go on. Shuvi Yanti Mimashaka Samnu Shama B'Kei 239. That was the other document that we just read. Sheba Emes Kol Mash Ana Machmir and the Hatzrich Hechsher Lekelim Shabalu Kidney is Obishal Akam Ube Emes Keneged Shuvas Haran Ube Emes Yesh Makam Lachalik. The Hacha by the Milchik Bread Havi Rak Safik Isser. Over here by the Milchik Bread, it's only a Safik Isser, like the Shach said before, because we're not sure if ultimately you're going to end up being Nichshal and eating it with the Fleishik. Zimimela Havadullah Losavala Ul Maskana. So my father's maskana over here is in Tavshin Samachay. Tvei Nira Lomar De Makelim Eina B'nei Yomun. If we waited 24 hours in between them doing the run of the milchik bread and our run of paraver bread, Lo Hanal. You have a lot to rely on that we do not have to go ahead and kasher these suction equipment kalim. Why? Number one, the Shach says that Pas Chalavi is only a Safik Yisr. It's not a Vada Yisr. That's number one. Number two, it's not clear in the first place if it needs kashering because maybe it's not really a Chepsa de Yisura. Maybe it's just Asami Tam Zeram. We find already by Bishal Akum and Big Machlokes Rishonim whether Akum who cooks in my Kalim, do we need a kashering or not? Achen, Kozman Shem Adayim B'nei Yoman. If they're going to do one run after the next and it's still going to be within the 24 hours, Pshita de Tzvichim Lachshiram. Dim lokin are nigram lakach shagama pas hashnia asher hibats musa pariv tihapech lios pas chalavis mikoach blias achalav hayotzes minakelim. If it's within 24 hours, then you're going to have the actual blias from the milchik bread going into these kelim. Elam kain yesh samach beisa keneged achalav, unless there's shishim in the mixture against the chalav that's on these. So this is what my father ends off in this tshuva and tavshin samachay. So we began this evening the sugya of milchik bread, and Amir Tzashem next week will continue to discuss about where the parameters are drawn for having milchik bread and milchik crackers. I see they forgot to put a vart on the back, so maybe I'll just tell you a quick vart kal peh, maybe, if it works. Just a quick interesting story. Rameir Primishlano, they say that one time he went to a certain community, and he got to the community and he asked them where the shul was. So they told him, you make a right and a left, you go over here and over there. And finally he walks in, he sees a whole crowd of people. And he says, is this the shul? Yes, it's the shul. And he looks up and he sees that the roof is caving in. He sees the walls, every other brick is out. And the benches are all cracked and everything. So he says, oh, manorah mokam hazeh, ein zeh ki im beis elokim. So they're all looking at him. Well, Yaakov Avinu said that when he realized that he was in a chashuva place, when he was by the Kodesh HaKadosh, when he was by the Beis HaMikdash. What do you mean to say? So they asked him, Rebbele, tell us, what do you mean? So he says, Manorah Makam Hazeh, what a shanda it is. I walk into a shul that looks like this. It must be Ein Zeh Ki Im Beis Elokim. This must be the Ribbono Shel Olam's house, because if it was your house, you would never let it look like this. You would never treat it this way. You would fix up the roof and you would fix up the benches and the paint and everything. So it reminded me of what Rav Soloveitchik writes, that if you look, the Gemara says in the end of Brachos, it's an interesting ha'ara, it's just reading the Gemara. So the Gemara says that you have to have more covet for a Beis HaMikdash than a Beis HaKnesses. Obviously, Beis HaKnesses is only Migdash Ma'at, and the Beis HaMikdash is the Migdash Gadol. It's the real Beis HaMikdash. So you have to have more covet. So how much covet do we have to have for a Beis HaKnesses? What are the rules? So the Gemara says you're allowed to wear shoes in a Beis HaKnesses. Why? Says the Gemara, because the defining characteristic of what I am or am not allowed to do in a Beis HaKnesses is ki beso. It's based on how a person would act in his own home. So just like when I'm in my own home, I wear shoes, and I'm not makbid if a guest walks in with his shoes, so too when I come to shul, I'm allowed to wear shoes. So that's the defining characteristic of where we draw the line for kavod beis haknesses. So along those lines, of Soloveitchik said that the same way if you come to someone's home, he wouldn't appreciate it if you're pacing back and forth and walking all over the place, right? That's very disrespectful. We're all sitting and eating, and this guy is walking up and down. So too when it comes to proper etiquette in a shul, you shouldn't be pacing around in the middle of davening. It's ki beso. The beso is what determines the proper conduct of a shul. So that's what he pointed out. And they say from Reb Chaim that that's what Reb Chaim explained when the Mishnah says in Pirkei Avos that there were 10 nisim that happened in the Beis HaMikdash. So one of them, he said, was omdim tzvufim u'mishtachavim mirvachim. Right? That when they stood up, everyone was crammed in. And when they lay down to do korim, there was plenty of room for everybody. So Reb Chaim pointed out, well, the miracle is only that it was mishtachavim mirvachim. There's no miracle in omdim tzvufim. What's the miracle? So Reb Chaim said, no, that's a miracle, that the yeshiva bachim weren't pacing back and forth. That in and of itself is also a miracle. Because that's not the proper way we're supposed to act in a shul. Acting in a shul is determined based on how a person would act in his own home. In the same way, or Meir Primishlana pointed out, the same way in your own home, you would make sure to fix up the tiles and fix up the roof and everything would be nice. So too in the shul, we have to be careful about the same thing. We have to be careful to follow the same etiquette we would have in our home or in someone else's home. Wish everyone a wonderful week. What?